The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
Let's play some hockey. Here we go.
The puck playing Gretzky. You like the Moosehead.
Hey, Cabral, how come you never see any black guys playing hockey, huh?
Now, do you think it's easy to just gradually take over every professional sport? Let me tell you something, man. Brothers are starting to figure out this ice thing. Hope you enjoyed it.
Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, December 10th, 2025. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing. It's Just Right.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
It's a plot against white people. They call it multiculturalism, even though it evades all cultural issues and speaks obsessively and exclusively about skin color, a singular physical characteristic over which no individual has any choice or control. Which is the whole point, isn't it? Because it is the latter reality that the left is counting on in order to destroy Western culture, a culture of individual freedom. By equating criticism of other cultures with racism, the left has effectively distracted everyone from the fact that cultures are a product of human beliefs, actions, and choices, whereas skin color is not open to any moral or intellectual considerations. As this reality begins to surface in the consciousness of more and more people, there is emerging a very sinister and more aggressive, like a rougher edge to the whole racism and immigration issue. And it is permeating every level of society, from America's president himself right down to the average man on the street. So be forewarned, the conversation has definitely drifted into new territory, as we shall discover right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org. Hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave. Follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform, and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because, as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm getting so sick of hearing about racism that I'm considering becoming a racist myself. Problem is, I'm colorblind when it comes to someone's skin, but not when it comes to the color of someone's ideas. And collectivism comes in a variety of colors. Red, green, blue, black, yellow, but not, coincidentally, in white. That's because the true racists among us are attempting to divide people into two basic political camps based on skin color. White people and non-white people, white alone being the operative point of difference. They push their racism disguised as something called multiculturalism, an oxymoronic anti-concept based on some kind of floating abstraction called inclusion, again, actually referring not to cultures, but to skin color, and dedicated to creating not inclusion, but exclusion of white people from the social fabric entirely. As if this is some kind of noble objective in and of itself. That being said, when collectivists of all colors refer to a white culture, they are generally referring to Western culture, a culture that recognizes individual rights, protects individual freedom, and treats all individuals equally before and under the law. Life, liberty, property, the free pursuit of happiness, not death, coercion, and own nothing and be happy. And therein lies the true nature of a cultural divide. What determines a culture has far less to do with identity politics, as with physical characteristics, than with language and thought processes. We've recently taken a close look at these fundamentally incompatible ways of thinking on past episodes of the show, particularly on our October 15 and 22 broadcast about identity politics, and differing cultural concepts of time and existence itself. The fact that these ways of thinking may find themselves aligned with certain skin color groups or ethnicities, again, physical characteristics, is merely associative. It's an associative coincidence. It's not cause and effect. And this principle also applies to Western culture's association with people of white skin pigmentation. Objectively speaking, skin color is irrelevant to anything. But here's the problem. Ideas and ideologies are not visible to the human eye, except in very indirect ways requiring some competent degree of discernment regarding someone's comments or behavior. So rather than engage in a debate on the merits of each culture's values, history, and accomplishments, which would always objectively favor the ideal of Western culture, those seeking to destroy the values of Western culture must distract and push the debate into an arena where only identity politics is relevant. And this is the culture of the left. If all this sounds insane to you, well, just wait till you hear it from the horse's mouth. Until preparing for this week's show, I had never heard the name Wajahat Ali before. Wajahat Ali has apparently had one of his overtly racist podcasts go viral, causing reactions in numerous social media communities, including those of Michael Knowles on this side of our upcoming bumper and those of Mark Dice on the return side. So when I warned earlier that the conversation has definitely drifted into new territory, with a sinister and more aggressive rough edge to the whole race-immigration debate, well, here's a bit of what I meant.
Wajahat Ali, responding to Americans who are rightly quite concerned that the people that we import into this country from foreign places keep murdering us. Here's Wajahat Ali's brilliant liberal commentary.
You have lost. You lost. The mistake that you made is you let us in the first place. See, that's the thing with brown people. I'm going to say this as a brown person. There's a lot of us. Like a lot. There's like 1.2 billion in India. There's more than 200 million in Pakistan. There's like 170 million in Bangladesh. And those are just the people there. I'm not even talking about the folks who are expats or immigrants. There's a bunch of us. And we breed. We're a breeding people. And the problem is you let us in 1965. There were a few of us beforehand. But once you let one of us in, you know what happens with brown folks? Our grandmother comes, our grandfather comes, our uncle comes, our aunt comes, our second cousin comes, our third cousin comes. Then we have kids, a bunch of kids. And then guess what? Some white women, you know, the Western civilization women, the pure women, the American women, quote unquote, the Rust Belt women, the real women, they like some of us brown folks. We don't take them. They come to us. So we're embedded. We are everywhere. We are everywhere. I've traveled this country. I'm going to speak as a brown person. Brown people are everywhere. There will be a Patel Motel or there will be a Desi restaurant everywhere. I want you to realize this. You have lost. Your story is a shitty story filled with misery. It's filled with bland chicken. It's filled with terrible, terrible dry ass meat. Your music sucks. All your culture sucks. That's why the kids like listen to black people and their music. That's why the kids love Latinos. Your parties suck because they're monochromatic. Our parties have better food, better music, better looking women.
And yet you all come here. I can't help but notice in this terribly vicious diatribe by Wajahat Ali against white people and America, you know, the kind of founding stock of America generally. I can't help but notice in this vicious about why he hates every single thing about us and our country and our culture. I can't help but notice his parents came here. And in fact, his whole argument is that all these other people are coming here as well. Wajahat Ali is a perfect example of the problems of immigration. I love this diatribe. It's a beautiful diatribe. Because on the one hand, Wajahat Ali, he does this, I'm a brown person, and my parents are from Pakistan, and I'm a brown, okay. But on the one hand, in many ways, Wajahat Ali is the perfect American lib, par excellence. This is a guy who was born here, he was born in California. He graduated from UC Berkeley. He bloviates in a bunch of frivolous left-wing outlets. He dresses like a slob. He is a perfectly assimilated American lib. And yet, he expresses a deep hostility toward the native population of the country to which his parents fled from Pakistan. And it's not just a hostility in the general sense. It's a deeply tribal hostility. It's a hostility that comes from his race and his nation of origin, you know, homeland, I guess, you know, a generation back, and culture. And what this suggests to me is that even in the best of circumstances, heritage is a part of identity that is enduring, that is complex, that is enduring, and that cannot simply be waved away by passing a multiple choice civics exam. You know, we have this fiction, as he even grants, he says, look, all of this mass migration, it started in 1965. I know we all pretend like America's a country of immigrants and it was all founded by immigrants and it was all just immigrants all the way down. But that's not really true. It really just started in 1965 when the liberals opened up our immigration process and flooded the country with the third world, and everything's gotten worse ever since. But, you know, it's not only because of the immigrants, but it's both a symptom and a cause of many problems. Anyway, here we are now, and that's how it goes. Even under the best of circumstances, where you have a guy like Wajahat Ali, who is as assimilated to American liberal culture as it is possible to be, went to one of the exemplars of American liberal institutions, and even there, he has this deep tribal identity. Me Pakistani, me hate you, white honky American. Like, that basically, that sounds like a complete knuckle-dragging troglodyte, doesn't he? But with a kind of liberal twist to it. And what does this tell us? It tells us that the ancients and the medievals and basically everyone before the 1960s was right about immigration. Our founding fathers, who severely restricted immigration, everyone was right about immigration until us.
Everybody knows we have an immigration problem in this country, but most people assume that means that there are just too many illegal immigrants in America. But the elephant in the room that most people have been afraid to talk about until very recently is the reality that there are just too many immigrants, period, in America. We let way too many of them flood in. They're not assimilating. Their children are not properly assimilating. Their grandchildren aren't properly assimilating. And instead, they have been engaging in a cultural insurrection. Do I need to go over the Nationality Act of 1790 again to highlight what the Founding Fathers wrote and put into law about what they wanted in terms of the only people who were allowed at that time, until the liberals changed the laws, of course, to be citizens of this great country? They certainly didn't want people like this clown's parents who came here from Pakistan and then gave birth to this anti-American, anti-white New York Times columnist.
You have lost. You lost. The mistake that you made is...
he's talking to white people.
You let us in the first place. See, that's the thing with brown people. I'm going to say this as a brown person. There's a lot of us.
We've noticed.
Like, a lot. There's like 1.2 billion in India. There's more than 200 million in Pakistan. There's like 170 million in Bangladesh. Those are just the people there. I'm not even talking about the folks who are expats or immigrants. There's a bunch of us.
We know white people are actually a minority on planet Earth, not to mention in numerous different states in the United States. But continue.
And we breed. We're a breeding people.
Oh, we know. We can't go anywhere these days without seeing you or smelling you, not to mention our tax dollars are paying for your children.
We're a breeding people. And the problem is you let us in 1965. There were a few of us beforehand, but once you let one of us in.
He's talking about the Hart-Celler Act, which no mainstream Republicans will talk about. That changed the quotas of immigration, which had restricted it to maintain the racial demographics that the Founding Fathers had intended.
You know what happens with brown folks? Our grandmother comes, our grandfather comes, our uncle comes, our aunt comes, our cousin comes, our second cousin comes.
We know. Obviously, everybody knows this.
Comes, our third cousin comes. Then we have kids, a bunch of kids. And then guess what?
We pay for them.
Some white women, you know, the Western civilization women, the pure women, the American women, quote unquote, the Rust Belt women, the real women, they like some of us brown folks. We don't take them. They come to us. So we're embedded. We are everywhere. We are everywhere. I've traveled this country. I'm going to speak as a brown person. Brown people are everywhere.
Not everywhere. There's still some nice, peaceful, small towns in certain parts of the country where immigrants and their spawn haven't found.
I want you to realize this. You have lost. Your story is a story filled with misery. It's filled with bland chicken. It's filled with terrible, terrible...
White people's story is a miserable story. White people founded this great country, obviously. The anti-whitism and the disdain for America is extraordinarily high, not only in many of the immigrants who come here to exploit this country as an economic zone, but like I said, in their children and in their grandchildren. In fact, it usually takes at least three generations from the time a non-European immigrant comes to America before those people are, well, if they ever become Americans as part of their identity.
Dry ass meat. Your music sucks. All your cult.
Our music sucks, huh? Rock and roll, heavy metal, country. Compare that to the grunting over a beat of rap and hip hop.
Your music sucks. All your culture sucks. Nobody, that's why the kids like listen to black people and their music. That's why the kids love Latinos. Your parties suck because they're monochromatic. Our parties have better food, better music, better looking women.
Yeah. It's literally that the racism that you're experiencing and the struggle to make ends meet actually means the diet don't work for you the same.
And what did this Pakistani's parents do after they emigrated to America, other than gracing us with his presence? Well, they got caught up in Operation Cyberstorm and arrested, convicted, and sentenced to 5 years in prison as part of an investigation into large-scale trafficking in counterfeit and infringing computer software. So we're going to have to talk more about the problems of legal immigration since so few Republicans and conservatives want to address this. We're going to have to pave the path for them once again to move the Overton window to make it safe for people to finally talk about this important issue and the cultural insurrection that they've been engaging in. But thankfully, some Republicans are finally starting to talk about this. Here's Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
You have some strain on the right that says, illegal immigration is bad. Legal immigration, no matter what, is good. And wait a minute. Now, I'm not saying any of it's that it's all bad or what, but bringing 10 million people from like Somalia and dumping them into Georgia, is that good because it's legal? I think you have to think critically about what are we doing with an immigration policy, and is it benefiting the American people? Is it helping to promote a strong American culture? We should never bring people into this country who hate America. And
who can't and won't assimilate. So now the globalists are very upset that the Trump administration has paused immigration applications from 19 different countries, including Afghanistan, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Ilhan Omar's homeland, Sudan, Yemen, and others.
And they contribute nothing.
Not only they contribute nothing, but they're a drain on the system. They're a cultural destructive force. They leech our tax dollars. They commit crimes. But yes, tell us more, sir.
The welfare is like 88%. They contribute nothing. I don't want them in our country, I'll be honest with you, okay? Somebody would say, that's not politically correct. I don't care. I don't want them in our country. Their country is no good for a reason. Their country stinks, and we don't want them in our country. I can say that about other countries, too. We don't want them to hell. We have to rebuild our country. You know, our country's at a tipping point. We could go bad. We're at a tipping point. I don't know if people mind me saying that, but I'm saying it. We could go one way or the other, and we're going to go the wrong way if we keep taking in garbage into our country. Ilhan Omar is garbage. She's garbage. Her friends are garbage. These aren't people that work. These aren't people that say, let's go, come on, let's make this place great. These are people that do nothing but complain.
And leech off our system and then get into political positions, elected offices to further destroy our country, which is why legal immigrants shouldn't be allowed to hold political office.
It's clear that Donald Trump is deeply concerned about any garbage cultures being allowed into America. And in stating that their countries are no good for a reason, you'll notice that not once was the issue of skin color mentioned. When I first heard Wajahat Ali, he sounded to me like the brown version of Nick Fuentes, and I took him just about as seriously. Because taken as just heard, Ali's diatribe was simply silly, and if there's some kind of humor intended, well, the joke is on him. He certainly doesn't see himself as a unique individual, just as some part of a big brown pile of something or other. What the hell does he think he won? A skin color numbers game? What's the prize for that? I mean, I call that a huge loss if that's where your mind is at. The guy's a total loser. Talk about superficial and shallow. Ali should be ashamed of himself because he's confessed to a glaring series of moral shortcomings and a lack of basic intelligence. For some reason, Wajahat Ali seems to think that there's something unique about brown immigrants and that they eventually bring all of their relatives over with them. Well, I've got news for him. You know what white people do when they immigrate? They bring their families, their cousins, their relatives, etc., etc., and they breed too. That was the history of my family when it immigrated from Germany back in the 1950s. And you know what else my family did after they got here? My great uncle owned and operated a huge farm just outside of London and sponsored my immediate family to live in Canada. No one could just walk into the country unvetted. And after a few short years, my father ended up building tall apartment buildings, office towers, and residential homes that will remain in use for many, many years to come. And during his lifetime, he also ran several major construction and plumbing and heating companies and started a retail store called Household Plumbing, which still operates today under subsequent ownership and management. And during that time, he employed hundreds of people in well-paying jobs. And while our European immigrants did congregate in certain Canadian communities, they completely integrated into Canadian culture and never once gave a thought to forcing Canadians to abide to their previous cultures of origin. So, aside from breeding, what has Wajahat Ali promoted as a virtue of brown people? How have they contributed to the wealth and culture of America? Or to the wealth and culture of their own nations of origin? And how would he respond to Trump's observation that they don't make this place great, they're only people who do nothing but complain? Well, of course, he's complaining, isn't he? Ali says he identifies as brown, citing countries like Pakistan, India, and Bangladesh as his color criteria. Certainly not cultures associated with, say, black people in the Caribbean, or black people in major American cities, and who knows where the mulattoes, the Asians, the yellows, and reds fit into Ali's collective brown culture. Of course, we all know that what he really means when he uses the color brown is any color except white. While it is true that the so-called non-white but brown races form a huge majority of the planet's population, unfortunately, enough of them have been led to believe that because a small minority white population finally figured out how to create wealth and escape poverty, that this wealth was somehow taken from them. How presumptuous and ridiculous. This mentality is common to all Marxist and collectivist thinking. The idea of wealth creation is beyond their ability or willingness to abstract. And to begin with, as victims of their own poverty, they had no wealth that could be taken from them in the first place. And just how this wealth was supposedly taken from them is another process I'd like to hear explained. And speaking to the brown culture, the mentality of that culture that is being described by Wajahat Ali, it is clear that the culture described is still primitively detached from reality. Because if there's one thing the so-called white cultures did, it was to acknowledge reality and learn to adapt to reality rather than trying to force reality to conform with their fantasies and something-for-nothing ideologies. And when Wajahat Ali tells me, as a white person, that I have lost, to what is he referring? What have I as an individual lost? Wealth? Poverty? Status? I don't get it. Thank goodness he told us about it, because otherwise I wouldn't even have known I was involved in some kind of racial competition. I mean, talk about a race to the finish. Oh, no offense intended to you folks from Finland. And of course, as Mark Dice correctly observed, they are not assimilating, but engaging in a cultural insurrection. It's funny, you know, but that word assimilating reminded me of a dystopian story in Canada going back just a few short years ago, where a car owner in one of the provinces got into a public controversy because the government objected to his car license plate that read something like assimilate, spelled with the number 8 on the end of it, which for the car owner was a reference to the Borg in the Star Trek Next Generation TV show. Unfortunately, to government officials, it was found to be offensive to the non-assimilated. Therefore, he couldn't get his license plate personalized with this expression. And I mean, this kind of mentality is just beneath contempt. Now, on December 3rd, Victor Davis Hanson appeared as a guest on GB News, during which he cited negative consequences of DEI policies, diversity, equity, inclusion, on the U.S. military, as well as the instantly positive consequences of Trump's ending DEI with respect to the military. But the really hard-to-believe thing that is going on is what Hanson described as critical legal and critical race theory, which he says has become pretty much institutionalized in all of the law schools and judges in the country. It's hard to believe because it's so insane on its face that one wonders how anyone could ever have supported it, let alone even accept the evil ideas on which these so-called critical theories are based.
Everybody says the left is in disarray and they don't know what they're doing, but they have adopted kind of a chaos theory, and it seems incoherent, but the narrative or the theme is that they're just going to make so much turmoil, like they just cut a video and said that you should disobey an order. They're attacking ICE. Chicago just had one of the worst weeks in violence, and the mayor is blaming it on anybody but himself. They cut videos with the F word, the S word. They shut down the government. There's no positive, but it creates, just like the COVID lockdown, a general sense of disarray. And when Trump is not addressing it, then they're blaming him, and he should have said, this is what I did when I left. The inflation rate was 1.7 in 2020. You took it up to 5.2 for 4 straight years, and I'm bringing it down, but I've only been here 10 months, and next year it's going to be greater, as early as January, February probably, but he's not doing that. I don't know about the young right vote, but it's not just on immigration. It's not the Nick Fuentes. It's much wider, and that is it's a general anger, and it's, I know that we don't like to use racial categories, but it's mostly white males between the ages of 18, 17, and 35, and they're suffering from a prolonged adolescence. They're not getting married. They're not having children. They're not buying a home. And there's a lot of reasons, and Trump is addressing a lot of them, but he's not explaining why he's doing that. For example, half the people go to college, only half graduate of that half that go. The average debt is about $70,000. They can't afford it. The degrees are mostly worthless when they get out, environmental studies, sociology, these studies courses. They are told from kindergarten on that their toxic masculinity, they're white, they don't get affirmative action, they're angry. Stanford last year took 9% of all the people who applied were white males, even though they make up 33%. So they're trying to address that, and I'll give you one example. When they came in on January 21st, the military was short 45,000. And the Biden Pentagon said it was because of drugs, obesity, gangs, and competition with private enterprise. And Pete Hegseth said, no, we did some studies, and they're almost all white males. And it's because of DEI, transgendered, and the humiliation in Afghanistan. So if we go back to military readiness, no DEI, and what happened? They almost immediately 50,000 people volunteered, and there's no shortage. So they know the problem, and they've solved it in that one case, and then they need to address inflation. They need to say how DEI is over with, for the most part. The transgender stuff is passing. He's been really, no other president would have just said, if you're a transgender biological male, you're not going to participate in women's sports. So I think it's being addressed, and you can start to see it's being addressed because Nick Fuentes has been saying lately that he wants to pivot and make a nationalist, socialist, populist party. In other words, he is saying that he's going to be like Mondami if Mondami will emphasize race and no immigration, and then he's willing to forego all free market, all that stuff, and go to a neo-socialist. And that shows you that I don't think that he's going to have much appeal. And
you talk about this nationalist socialist policy. It sounds a lot like George Wallace running in 1964 or 1968.
The thing about Fuentes, just he is popular, but he's not popular in the sense that this is my agenda and I would like you to follow it. It's you've all been screwed by the system, and here's what these horrible people have done to you, and I'm saying things about them that no one else will ever say. I'll use the N-word. I'll call women bitches. I'll do all of this, and that serves young men as a vet. They vet. That, you know what I mean? It's just like, I want to turn him on and just get it all out of my system. But they don't really, I don't think they adhere to most of the stuff that he's talking about. I know a lot of young kids at Stanford that are, they will tell you that a lot of people at Stanford University listen to him, 200 or 300 of them. And they don't, they're men that, he hits these topics. He's a very demagogic genius. And so he will tell a young man, hey, and it's true. He says, we live in the sluttiest world you can imagine. You turn on the internet and women are half dressed and they take their clothes off. Nobody says anything. You go to campus, everybody looks like a blank blank. However, if you have blank blank with them the next day, if you don't call them up and say you're going to marry them, all of a sudden it's the Victorian age and you're a rapist. Well, there's elements of truth to that. But the way he says it is so exaggerated and funny that they want to hear that because that's happened to them or they're afraid to. And that's how he operates. He takes an element of truth and he makes it the truth. And he's got a lot more rhetorical skills than the people who interview him. And that's why he's a cobra. He's very dangerous. Unless if you want to take him on, you can't just say he's a 27-year-old crank.
Now, it's not just illegal immigrants that the liberal media and liberals in general, I suppose, have been sympathetic towards who have criminal backgrounds. So we recently saw this case in Chicago where a gentleman with 72 arrests was freed on bail by this woman judge. What do you make of, and this obviously also links in with that case in Charlotte, what do you make of this so-called suicidal empathy from the left? Is this going to hurt them in the midterms, these kind of stories, if they keep happening?
They will, but notice how you described it, this individual, and everybody does describe it that way, but the vast majority, over 50%, comes from... we're talking about inner-city young black men. They commit... They're 3% of the demographic, and they commit 53% to 54% of violent crimes. And they are the people who fall into the diversity, equity, inclusion category. So when a person lets out someone like DeCarlos Brown in Charlottesville, or the most recent was 76, and the judge or the mayor or the people involved are on the far left, or they are part of the DEI industry, they don't talk about it, but the subtext is they are schooled in critical legal and critical race theory, and they believe that the system under those tenets is created by wealthy white people, wealthy white men, wealthy Christian heterosexual white men who have power. And critical legal theory, if you read what they say and write, it's sort of, well, it's against the law to hit somebody because wealthy white people don't have to hit people because they've stole all the money. Or it's against the law to go into a store and steal a watch because wealthy white men have watches. They don't have to steal. And that critical legal theory is pretty institutionalized at all the law schools and the judges. And that's what's behind it. It's the idea that these people who are let out 76 times or 44 times and prey on people, they themselves are victims, and what they did is not really inherently a criminal act according to critical legal and race theory. It's only a construct. And it's because the laws were created by people who don't need to break them.
You are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. That so-called critical BS theory was so irrational and contradictory that I find it difficult to even accept that anyone thinking that way could in any way be called a critical thinker. As with all such labels, they mean the opposite of what they're called. In this case, uncritical, non-thinking racism is all that we're dealing with. But consider the implications of the kind of critical race thinking that Hansen described the following way. Quote, it's against the law to hit somebody because wealthy white people don't have to hit people, because they stole all the money. It's against the law to go into a store and steal a watch because wealthy white men have watches. They don't have to steal, end quote. I think that the critical thing to take account of was entirely missed here. Notice all the talk about hitting and stealing? It's all violence-oriented. This stupid critical legal race theory makes no reference to how a free society is supposed to operate, namely, one free from violence and coercion and theft. But hitting and stealing are the hallmarks of all things left. The idea of consent and trade to mutual benefit are rejected by the left because that would mean that they would have to expend some kind of effort to create a product or service that others would willingly trade for. And why go to all that trouble when you can simply vote for a communist or fascist dictator who will do all of your hitting and stealing for you? And that's the reality of the situation, whether you feel comfortable with that description or not. Now here's the real revelation about this moronic critical race theory that no one is talking about, and it is being disguised and hidden by all of the repeated references to wealthy white men and heterosexual white men and all of the repeated white anybody or white anything. I think the most chilling comment made about the critical legal theory was Hansen's statement that this critical legal theory is pretty well institutionalized in all of the law schools and the judges, because the laws are only created by people who don't need to break them. Wow, let's just take that critical legal so-called theory, I say so-called because it's actually an ideology, at face value. When it is argued that laws are only created by people who don't need to break them, beyond being an utterly false and ridiculous statement, what is that statement actually implying? Basically, that, again, so-called white rich people behave morally and that non-whites behave immorally. White people don't steal, brown people do. Is that really something they want to promote and advertise? Wealthy white men have watches. They don't have to steal, goes the ideology. Did it ever occur to the critical racists to ask how anyone of any color becomes wealthy in the first place? They think that the rich white race just invaded the poor nations and took their wealth from them, thereby becoming wealthy on all their poverty pickings. It's ridiculous. To illustrate how absurd this thinking is, here's what the criticals are saying. For example, When the white explorers first arrived from Europe to America, they discovered an island named Manhattan, and it had all kinds of high-rises and towers and functioning water supplies and sewers and subways, and so they just landed and took that wealth away from the native indigenous peoples. That's why they have it today, don't you know? Beyond ridiculous, right? But that's the very logic that they're using. Similarly, in arguing that wealthy white men don't have to steal watches because they already have watches, well then from whom did the whites steal the watches if that's how it's done? Did those watches just grow or appear on their arms? How were the watches made? How did the watches created get from those who created them to those who are wearing them? Oh yeah, they were obviously stolen. And just how many watches do you suppose would actually be assembled if the only reward for doing so is to have the end product stolen from their creators? Welcome to the cause of the poverty that haunts those cultures who think like this. Wanting something for nothing is the fundamental cause of evil. And getting back to what Victor David Hansen discussed before bringing up critical racism, I couldn't help but notice that he arrived at the same conclusion about Nick Fuentes as I did on last week's show, when I concluded that either Nick Fuentes does not understand the nature of the left-right polarity, or he sits squarely on the left. And of course, both propositions are true. As described by Hansen, Nick Fuentes wants to pivot and make a nationalist socialist populist party. Yikes. Does that description sound vaguely familiar to anyone? A nationalist socialist populist party? Not only does it sound Hitlerian, but ideologically it's pretty much like the majority of parties in power today, except maybe they lean more towards an internationalist communist tyranny, you know, a so-called globalist government. Which version of tyranny do you prefer? Now, Victor Davis Hansen offered an interesting piece of advice to Donald Trump that we seem to have been hearing a lot lately, namely that Trump should be doing more to explain how his economic policies will address the concerns of what he called the young right. We heard that same advice recently offered on our November 19 broadcast, wherein Glenn Beck and his guest Justin Haskins, you might recall, observed that while Trump is liked for being a person of action and fixing problems, to address this particular group, what is needed is a problem explainer who can explain how we got here and how we can solve the crisis. And Haskins concluded that people need to be convinced of that, and right now they just aren't. And in terms of explaining how we got here, it is critical to emphasize that all of the so-called crises have been government created for the purpose of growing the state to the point where it can claim total control of the economy and of everyone's lives. Now, you might have noticed that I find myself increasingly using the term so-called as an adjective to describe many of the government's initiatives. That's because it's impossible to accept the names given to these programs or events that actually do the opposite of what the name suggests. You know, so-called theory, so-called white cultures, so-called brown cultures, so-called vaccines, so-called critical race theory, so-called government, so-called insurrection. And beyond being just quote-unquote so-called anti-concepts, they're all guilty of projecting their hatreds and true racism and envy through all of these so-called distractions. So you can well understand why all of the so-called racial wars are popular with the left. Now, comedian Nicholas DeSanto has certainly earned his reputation for not shying away from very politically incorrect humor in his monologues, as we'll see as we break for a smile on this side of our upcoming bumper. And on the return side, Paul Joseph Watson, on his November 30 podcast, reacts to an earlier podcast featuring Piers Morgan and Tucker Carlson in a one-on-one, in-person exchange about Britain's very serious immigration crisis.
New York has a foreign-born communist Muslim mayor. How does that happen?
Adrian is chuffed.
This happens, Adrian, when we allow people to vote who don't feel they belong to the nation, they don't believe in the nation, they don't think they have a stake in the future of the nation, All they care about is government benefits and free stuff. And that's why we got to stop allowing women to vote. It's disgraceful. Speaking of misbehavior, a Pakistani doctor in Greater Manchester area... Come on, my set is short. A Pakistani doctor in Greater Manchester area is in trouble because he had sex with a nurse during an operation while his patient was under anesthesia. So he's operating on the patient. Dr. Sohail Anjum is operating on the patient. The patient is in anesthesia. He stops the operation, goes next door, has sex with a nurse, comes back and finishes the operation. Greater Manchester Hospital has opened an investigation against him. The Pakistani embassy in London has awarded him with a medal. Because he's the first Pakistani doctor in the UK to have sex at work consensually. He's a national hero.
And isn't it all worth it for the diverse cuisine?
What about British culture didn't you like and has been improved by new cultures?
Oh, in not well.
Tell me, what didn't you like before? What are you glad is gone from the Britain you grew up in?
Let me tell you, if you came to London in the 50s and 60s, the food was crap.
Are you really saying I'll the food?
I do love a good curry.
I like curry. I do. But now that we've got the recipe...
There are a lot of white English people I would happily trade for a good weekly chicken tikka masala. When Piers wants to stuff his bloviating face with curry, how far do you think he ventures outside of his multi-millionaire West Kensington bubble? With how much enthusiasm does he extol the virtues of diversity while safely ensconced in his West Sussex country pile in a 99.7% white area?
Well, people whose ancestors built Stonehenge are not here anymore. So the city of London is 36% white, and that's happened in the last, I don't know, 40 years.
Okay, so we've evolved.
But you're on the way to becoming the minority in the country.
By 2100, we will be a minority white country.
2063, as of today.
Well, I've read a bit later. But
these are dynamic numbers, so they change.
Yeah, but here's my question for you. So what? So what? So what? So what? So what?
Why are you here?
Because I want to meet my little girl, so...
You're meeting your little girl?
So what?
Been in London for 5 hours and I just got my chain snatched and I got decked in the face. London, is this normal? Is this the London experience I've been told about? I literally got off the metro, had Nando's, and now we're in Soho and I just fucking got my snatched.
So what?
I'm currently in Whitechapel and behind me, for those who don't live in London, right there, we have a translation in Whitechapel now so that the locals can understand the place that they live in. Now, Whitechapel used to be the most working class area of London, really. The white working class culture thrived here, and yet we've had a complete cultural shift and we now have a translation.
So what?
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Everywhere you go.
Christmas market in Warsaw. Christmas market in Brussels.
So what?
Christmas market in Warsaw. Christmas market in London.
About the same thing. I just come out Bond Street, off the circus, and heeding the azan.
So what?
When the diversity is such a strength, you need to protect Christmas markets with anti-tank barriers normally used to repel invading armies. And if the streets aren't littered with diversity barriers, they're increasingly filthed by a new form of cultural enrichment.
The South Asian community and how the tradition of palm chewing is causing a very real and costly problem for local councils, specifically in Brent, North London. Now, palm is a mix of betel nut, leaf, herbs and often tobacco, and it's quite popular among some South Asian communities. But once people chew it, they spit it out, and that dark red residue ends up staining the streets. In places like Wembley, you'll see it on pavements, on shop fronts, on telephone boxes. And it's a big issue because it's incredibly tough to clean. Even with high-powered cleaning jets, Brent Council says some of these stains just won't come off. And that's where the cost comes in. The council is spending over £30,000 a year just trying to clean it all up. So now Brent Council is saying enough is enough. They've adopted a zero-tolerance approach. They're putting up banners in hotspot areas, they're sending out enforcement officers, and anyone caught spitting palm can face a fine of up to £100.
England in 10 years.
I became the trash king.
I'm the trash king now, boys.
I was walking through old Dhaka when I smelled something strange. I followed the smell around the corner, and then I froze. Right in front of me, there was a river of trash. I decided to follow it, but for that, I had to cross it.
Look at that, the mountain of trash, imagine living in an area like this.
Don't have to imagine it. Some people in England already do. London, England, multicultural and multi-faith, with different races, genders and religions all mixing together and getting along peacefully. They told us multiculturalism failed. Fascinating, isn't it, how multiculturalism always ends up meaning virtually no white people.
So what?
This is all a bit of a black pill. Let's just forget about it for one night and watch a bit of comedy on the TV.
Listen, bruv, yeah, I just came here to feel the breeze through my hijab, okay?
Right.
Don't start on me about getting that question wrong.
So funny. There's literally no escape.
So what?
That river of trash that we just heard referred to is exactly what the image accompanying this week's blog post and emailer depicts. It's beyond belief that any people anywhere would allow such conditions to arise, let alone live in the middle of it. Between the mountains of trash and Trump's depiction of some of these cultures being garbage, it seems to me that the literal conditions are perfectly consistent with the cultural metaphor. Pollution on that scale is always a symptom of collectivism. To which Piers Morgan might respond, so what, right? I actually watched the entire discussion between Piers Morgan and Tucker Carlson, and I found it to be worth watching in the sense of learning what each of them is like when discussing a number of diverse and unrelated issues. It was a longer interview than what we heard. One part of their discussion concerned the question of why people are gay, and that was a discussion that Tucker expanded upon in a later interview with a guest who had renounced his gay behavior. But those are topics for another day. In a way, I think that Piers Morgan's so what comments were taken a little bit out of context, although valid on another level. But Morgan actually agreed with Carlson's major cultural concerns as being factual. But in his frame of reference, speaking about those areas of Britain that are not flooded with immigrants, he reacted with repeated so what's. And that suggested to me that his concern for others who have to deal with the problem might be somewhat lacking. But broadly speaking, his so what comment was really a reaction to the fact that white people were a minority group in terms of numbers, because that was the limited context under which Tucker Carlson raised the issue. But even if that was the limited context behind Morgan's responses, he should have at least acknowledged that to those who do live in those areas that have been invaded by mass immigration, it's not just a so-what affair. Very telling as well was Paul Joseph Watson's comparisons of Christmas markets in Warsaw versus Christmas markets in Brussels, London, and all the anti-tank barriers and diversity barriers that were being built. There were a lot of visuals we couldn't share with you on this kind of a show, but I'm telling you, it was very telling. Here in my city of London, Ontario, there was a Christmas market set up at the Western Fair. And when my daughter Danielle and the grandkids attended about a week ago, she was quite surprised to see how crowded it was, and more significantly, attended by all white people, which is a rare sight in the city these days. I leave it to our listeners to decide whether or not this says something about a cultural divide in the city and how it can be made visible because of skin color. I mean, this could be a perfect illustration of that racially associative coincidence I discussed at the beginning of the show. The biggest problem with discussing any issue in terms of race is that any negative behavior associated with certain members of a given race is automatically associated with every member of that given race, which is never the case. That is why when we hear a statistic like, you know, 3% of blacks are responsible for over 50% of violent crime in a given area, I always wonder why the larger percentage of good black people don't insist that their politicians keep that given 3% off the streets. As unjust as any association with one person's bad behavior with an entire group might be, it seems to me to be in the interest of the group affected to do something about it. And this is not a racial issue, it's political. Now, in contrast, discussing an issue in terms of culture and talking about negative cultural behaviors, then you can safely assume that just about every active member of that culture shares the same behaviors and beliefs. After all, that's what a culture is. And remember, culture is about behaviors and beliefs, and to be a member of a given culture means acting in accordance with those cultural values. The sad conclusion, I think, is that the whole racism debate has been colorblinded to racism's colorblind solution. A conscious refusal and condemnation of all discrimination and injustice carried out because of skin color. Western culture and its values have simply been packaged as being quote-unquote white by those on the left, while the reality of racism emanates solely from those who constantly obsess and talk about it to disguise their envy and their hatred of the productive by the non-productive, or as Ayn Rand put it, their hatred of the good for being the good. As warned Donald Trump, the country's at a tipping point. We could go one way or the other, and we're going to be going the wrong way if we keep taking garbage into our country. And if that happens, well, then the country will have tipped to the left, which is exactly why it's every freedom-loving person's responsibility to do whatever he or she can do to push the tipping point to the right. And speaking of tipping points, here's a tip for you. Be sure to join us again next week when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Do you guys like the news?
Yeah.
10 train passengers were stabbed by this black guy. And the police... That's not the funny part. This is new. Why? How can you be ahead of me? I like your anticipation, though. The police ruled out terrorism. The police ruled out terrorism. They said, this is just the first date of Notting Hill Carnival's national tour. The first date of Notting Hill Carnival's national tour. When you don't go to the carnival comes to you. Right? My friend said, oh, they rule out terrorism. They rule out terrorism so fast because they don't want to scare people. I'd say at this point, it's more reassuring if it was for terrorism. Don't you think so? I mean, I'd rather see them killing for a cause. At least he believes in something. No? You are not with me? I mean, why did you stab these nice people? Well, it's because of the children in Gaza. 50 children are killed every minute. I heard it on the BBC. That's why I... Okay. How about you? Did you also kill for terrorism? Yo, no fam, I just belong to an impulsive race. Well, there you have it. At least he's not a terrorist.
Is that reassuring? That's not reassuring. Nottingham Carnival, showcasing the best of the British black culture. This year, a record 500 plus people arrested, 55 police officers wounded, 21 sexual assaults reported. The establishment called it a success. They call it a success because they say the overwhelming majority of the participants didn't get stabbed or arrested.